Hello and welcome to another episode of Right Now, a podcast on the business and craft of writing by Broadleaf Writers Association of Atlanta, Georgia. I am your host, Zachary Steele, and on tonight's episode, we are going back to the roundtable for another round of conversations with our board members about their lives, about their journeys, about writing. And it's actually the first of our first two episodes are focused on new board members that we have. And tonight I am joined by DC Phillips and Piper Hughley. And I'm so thrilled to not just have you here to talk to you, because yay, talking is awesome, but also just to have you guys on the board. It's so wonderful to have you there. And I want everybody to get to know you a little bit better. So we're going to start with that annoying thing that we writers have to do when we're on panels or in podcasts or we're meeting people for the first time, and ask you to introduce yourself briefly and tell us a little bit about what you've written and maybe even what brought you to Broadleaf and what you hope to get out of it. We'll start with you, DC.
Yeah, so I am DC Phillips, and I write primarily short Southern Gothic fiction that's infused with a lot of dark humor. I grew up, you know, like so many of us, on Twilight Zone and Tales from the Crypt and that type of thing. So a lot of my writing is fun and punchy with a lot of twists. But what I love about being part of Broadleaf in particular is the diversity of genres. You know, we all write different things, but there's some overlap there as you start to have conversations in terms of process and the business angle behind the scenes and the excitement of putting something out there for the first time and seeing it in print. So I got involved with Broadleaf after lurking for quite a while. I am part of the Horror Writers Association Atlanta chapter, and there's a lot of overlap in membership. So, you know, I would keep tabs on projects that Broadleafers had coming out and attend events and things. And when I attended my first Broadleaf conference, where Piper was one of the panelists who really made a big impression on me and an impact, I wanted to get more involved immediately following that event. So it's just nice to be surrounded by people who are so creative. The enthusiasm is contagious. And so I'm pretty excited about being a brand new board member.
That's funny. Lurkers are our favorite, first of all, but the way you described that, I'm sorry, I got kind of sidetracked in my head thinking about a kid in school who was desperately hoping that cool person that they want to go out with is either going to ask them, or maybe they're going to ask them, you know, somebody's going to ask somebody, but who's going to make the first move? No, that's brilliant. So I'm glad to have you. And I have bookmarked dark humor because I want to talk about that a little bit. Yes. But first, Piper, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, yeah, I'm Piper Hughley, and I write historical primarily. I've started out writing a historical romance, and trying to remember how I first came to Broadleaf. I don't remember exactly, but it probably was through
during
that.
The pandemic. It was during the pandemic. Yeah, I know yeah. You were at one of our virtual conferences.
Yeah, exactly. And but my initial connections were through romance and Georgia romance writers. Mm-hmm. And there's some overlap there in terms of those memberships, like Dirk was talking about with the horror writer. So I know it was through that. And then I was invited this past time to attend. But my segue from historical romance into biographical historical fiction is the thing that I've been about lately in terms of what it is that I write. And given market forces, I'm having to pivot again. So the fact that Broadleaf provides an opportunity to have exposure to different genres, you know, so that I can, you know, see what's out there, what's up with what's out there, before I might take the plunge or the pivoting turn is, I think, very beneficial in terms of that. So that's how it's worked out for me.
Happy to have you there. I think if I'm remembering correctly, and I'm hoping I'm correct, because if I don't mention this, she'll get very angry. I think One of our emeritus board members, who was just a board member at that time, Carmen Slaughter, is the one who made the introduction to us
Probably.
and brought us in. So kudos once again to Carmen for always being out there finding people for us. I want to have some general conversations about writing and your writing style, and I'm kind of making notes as we go to talk about things. But before we do that, tell us a little bit about your writing journey. I'd like what When did you know you wanted to be a writer, and anything along the way that you think might be of interest? We'll go in reverse this time. So, Piper.
We moved to a neighborhood, an art neighborhood, when I was 12, and that summer, and I was terrified for no good reason because nothing happened. Everything went wonderfully. The people ended up being or lifelong buddies and pals. But I guess with an overactive imagination, I thought something might happen, so I sequestered myself inside the house for that entire summer and wrote what would now be called, by rights in terms of genre, a royal romance. And that was long ago enough whenever you were charged by the phone call on your phone. And so I ran up my mother's phone bill doing research
Now, wait,
for.
are we talking? Wait, I'm sorry. Are we talking when you would be charged by, is this like mobile phone call? Because I mean, I
No,
can
like your
remember, because I was going to
landline,
say,
it
because I
used to
remember dial up
charge.
and anything
No,
that wasn't
before
local.
that.
Okay.
Before
So
that, and your
anything that
landline
wasn't
would.
local, you're calling long distance.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And
Okay.
you'd have to
Go ahead.
call people at certain times of the day, all of
Yeah.
that's how far back we're talking. But I ran up the phone bill for my parents who had just moved into this house. It was not a good time to run up bills when you've just moved into some place. And so my mother got the phone. I was like, "What is this? Oh my gosh!" And it's like, "Oh, I'm doing research for my novel." So, but I didn't get into trouble. She just knew I was like a little creative, weird child. For a long time prior to that Halloween, I would be a historical thing every year, like Betsy Ross. And then I was Laura Ingalls Wilder one year. She made me a
I
full
think
sun bonnet for put on my afro.
you and I would have been friends if we were in school together. You are my kind of people.
Just a weird little child, and she just indulged me. So yeah, so yeah, and that just occurred to me to start like writing stories at that point. So yeah, throughout middle school and high school, I kept my notebook with me, writing stories on and off. Kind of like they had on and off periods. That's the interesting thing about my writing journey is that there have been off periods that often corresponded to some kind of life event, in terms of that. I went to school for my MFA. I got my MFA, and then I moved down here to Georgia to pursue further study, and I was married, and I got pregnant. And the last I remember being hugely pregnant at a baby shower with my critique group. And then for like 10 years, there was nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
And
it's almost like
then,
you might have been busy or something.
yeah, exactly. It was like that. And then and I just have this distinct memory of my son when he was 10 and he did do this running off onto a football field. And I'm like, okay, now what? Okay, maybe I should get back to writing again. And that's been the more recent on period for me where I've been pursuing this historical thing since.
DC, what about you?
Well, first of all, Piper, I'm glad you didn't get in trouble for your research because how can you get in trouble for that, right? That's
I know, right?
academic.
Well, when my mother-in-law found out the story, she was like, she said to my mother, "You didn't spank her or something like that." So I was like, "Ugh, I got kind of lucked out with parents, I guess."
It's like that butterfly effect moment. If you had gotten in trouble, that might have been the end of
That
the
might
line for the
exactly
creativity.
research equals trouble.
So I actually have a very similar origin story, I guess you could call it, because in elementary school, I loved the activities where we got to tell a story, draw a little picture to go with it. And I remember in our computer lab where you could choose your clip art and things, I would write little stories. And I think I took the dialogue very seriously. And sometimes I would incorporate things I had heard my grandpa say or things I may have heard on TV. And so I do remember one time my mom being called in to talk about how, some of the language was maybe a little strong. And my teacher didn't want to discourage me because I guess it was pretty realistic, right? But it was, I remember that definitely being a discussion. So Piper, same. I didn't get in trouble. It's a story, my mom will still laugh about to this day. But that was kind of a sign that something was going on there. And yeah, I mean, like I said, all through high school, early college, I loved any kind of creative writing assignment that I could take and really run with. And a lot of times, again, my themes were pretty dark, which I think was surprising to my teachers. My parents, not so much because I grew up enjoying creepy, spooky things. I mean, my mom just took me to see Scream 7 last week. It's still our bonding thing. And so it's one of those situations where I would write drafts in late high school, early college that I started pulling out later, like, 5 and 10 years later, and thinking, there's something here. I could maybe polish this idea and really do something with it. So in 2014, I want to say, I put out a sampler online of just a few short stories. That was the original kind of teaser for what I call Frightful Fables. That's the brand that I've kind of started to grow. And then in 26, or excuse me, 2024, so exactly 10 years later, I put out an expanded, definitive, cleaned up edition in paperback and online as well. That was kind of my full circle moment. Again, to Piper's point, there are breaks that you take to regroup or to work on a draft or to get the encouragement that you needed that you never knew. You kind of needed that push to get back at it and put a project out there. But since then, it's been pretty much full steam ahead.
It's interesting listening to your stories because, like, these childhood moments, whether it's doing research long distance on the phone or writing something that is, as a kid, that is dark and has strong language, they very much represent the writer that you became. Because, Piper, you've written a lot of historical work, and so, your work is based in research and DC. Again, I want to come back to this dark humor, and horror that you write. But so I love humor in books, and I don't mean that I love humorous books, but I find that as both a reader and a writer, that interjecting humor in the right spots can diffuse tension in the right way. Obviously, you want to be very careful with it, but and I've used humor in some very dark moments, but I need to know what your definition of dark humor is.
That's a really good question. And I would say for me, dark humor is maybe laughing where you shouldn't be laughing, but it does, like you said, it diffuses the tension. I think it adds some humanity. There's an extra layer in there that makes a crazy, dark, maybe terrible situation relatable that we can kind of laugh it off. I think specific to horror, that's one of the things that I think I may have touched on when I was on Right Now with Dawn Major, that horror helps us almost make light of the dark situations that we find ourselves in life. And so I think for me, layering in what I call dark humor, there's entertainment to it, but there's also an element of, hey, I can laugh about this and everything is okay or going to be okay in the end.
Yeah, I mean, because in real life you talk about humanity, and in real life there are people who deal with tension and deal with difficult moments with humor because it's either how they process it or how they integrate it, and I'm a big fan of finding those spots for for that to come out. Piper, in your writing, do you use a lot of humor?
Necessarily. I think it's hard. I mean, not just because of the kind of thing that I write in terms of reflecting the real life circumstances and situations of real life women who've been through some things. Because if they hadn't, they wouldn't be worth writing about per se. Humor's difficult. It's not easy. I mean, I've been told, before, that personally speaking, I'm funny. But I think getting it down is a whole other thing. Whenever I see that happening, like where you're laughing, where you shouldn't, I call it the Tarantino effect, like because it kind of pops up like a lot in his movies or whatever, where like you've laughed and like you shouldn't, you
So
shouldn't
is
kind of
it
thing, but.
a bit of a conscious decision to not put it in? Or do you use it, or is it more of like a limitation to your writing style?
It doesn't come up in terms of this. Now, in terms of what I'm saying, in terms of biographical, historical, that's it's not something that comes up. Other things, maybe more so, in terms of other things that I've written that might be seeing the light of day, hopefully, relatively soon. It might be a more contemporary kind of thing. It just might be situational, in terms of the things that I write. So.
Well, I've had a lot of conversations with writers about humor, and I know that some don't use it because the context isn't right, and some people don't know how to use it. And I always applaud writers who don't use it when they don't know how to use it, because it can come off really badly if you do. So we're going to pivot to another conversation, but this is a pivot about pivoting. Piper, you had talked about pivoting, and I think that this may be one issue where writers struggle a lot, because I know for myself, I very limited expectations, and limited in that I would get it down to a nice little circle and it had to fall in there. And if it didn't fall in there, I was doing it wrong. Which makes it very hard to change when you're so fixated on one particular thing. This is how it has to be. So you had mentioned about pivoting, and not just for the first time here coming up, but how difficult is it for you to pivot, or do you just change very well?
Well, I think for me, at least, what I've been likening it to is being in a place of evolution. Say, particularly because of my two biographical historical novels, realizing more what they had in common and how I might parlay that into writing about something that, as it works out, would be more marketable. I.e., or more commercial, as my agent talks about it. So that's what I think it has more to do with, like I said, especially with this fall off with this particular kind of biographical historical fiction, which I knew was going to happen. And I called it years before it actually happened at a historical novel society town hall where I actually like spoke that aloud. In 2019, and the agents and the editors at the time didn't listen, but I knew it was coming. Yeah, so it's actually like sort of thinking about what made those two stories, those two novels, what is the thematic concern that still matters in terms of writing and thinking about things today. So that's really how I've been thinking more about it, and it has been more in terms of not the horror where there's some kind of extraterrestrial or supernatural kind of thing, but a more psychological horror in terms of that, and really like thinking more about stories in that particular vein. This is sort of the, I guess it's less jump scare kind of thing, but more this dawning, growing realization about what circumstances these particularly pointedly female characters find themselves in. So we'll see if it works. I don't know.
Is it fun?
I've been a long, I'm lifelong fan up to a point of like the Twilight Zone pointedly. I'm a bit of a, actually an expert in it, like embarrassingly.
Nice.
My students this term, because the survey of U.S. writers to get a Rod Serling module,
Oh,
actually.
nice.
That's how far
I,
gone I am with it in
yeah,
terms
no,
of like,
I grew
yeah,
up
you
on,
get your Fitzgerald and you get your Hemingway, but after spring break,
Right.
but
No,
he deserves it.
I grew up on the Twilight Zone and Outer Limits and Hitchcock. You talk about
He
psychological
belongs
terror
right up there
versus
with
jump
everybody
scare.
else, as far as I'm
Yeah.
concerned,
Oh,
particularly
absolutely.
in terms of the way storytelling.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's something about psychological terror that is very, very relevant to writing tension.
Yes.
And I mean, because that's all it is. It's just like building it and building it, squeezing and squeezing and squeezing and squeezing until it breaks. And when it does, it's just like a jarring kind of floor down to the floor kind of thing. So yeah, it's that's a fun conversation that I know I could talk about for like an hour or more. So and I'm sure DC they talk about it in HWA all the time. So
Yeah. And it is funny because, you know, when you get into, I think, any genre fiction, you know, like Piper, you mentioned romance, mystery, this or that. I think sometimes we as writers always get the feedback. For example, if I submit a story to a call for submissions, the feedback that I've gotten sometimes is, well, it's not enough of X or Y or Z. And so I think there is something to that agility that we have to have as writers, especially like you said, Piper, if you are marketing to a specific audience, you know, people love what they love, and we want to keep giving that to them. But it comes to a point where I think our next fear then as writers is, well, what if I'm too formulaic? Or what if I'm repackaging the same thing over and over? And so I think that pivot is something we're afraid of, but we also have to be able to do at a certain point.
Yeah, it's reality. That's true.
Yeah. Well, in the pivoting conversation, DC, is that something that you've faced in your writing, or have you been able to keep with it? I know you have kind of a wide net that you cast.
Yeah, so I'm getting ready to pivot a bit. So one of our fellow Broadleaf members, Vanessa Reed, she and I are working on more of a young adult thriller. So we started out pitching it to each other even as more horror, right? But the more we started to write and to plan and to outline, we realized it really is maybe more Southern Gothic mystery for young adults. And now even I think the genre of young adult fiction has really grown and expanded. You know, sometimes I find myself picking up a book that's labeled maybe young adult, but it's just because I'm looking for a different experience. Or, you know, sometimes the adult fiction, literary fiction can start to feel heavy after a while. So I'll pick up a book that's labeled young adult as a palate cleanser at times. And I'm shocked because I read it and I think, wow, this would not have been considered or marketed to young adults when I was a young adult. And so I think the genres and the age ranges and things like that that are recommended have really shifted, even from a marketing and packaging perspective. So that's one thing. It's been very helpful to sit in on some of these right now sessions and the conference panels, because I am learning more about, well, you know, what defines a work as Southern Gothic versus historical fiction. You know, what we're writing right now, I wouldn't consider historical fiction because we're not centering it on any one event or one person who actually existed, but there are those historical elements that we need to ground in reality so that it feels very much, of the era that we're writing in. The timelines that we're working on are realistic and match up with reality at a certain point. So I've said all of that to say I'm learning so much just from being around others and listening what they have to say.
When does it take place?
We're jumping right now between the 50s and the 90s. I should say 1950s and 1990s.
You just say that 19 in front of
Right,
it.
at that or there.
It really bothers me that, and I've heard this from multiple places, it bothers me that books that are based in the 80s and 90s are considered historical.
I know,
But it only
but
bothers me because it makes me realize how much,
technically,
no.
people, some the younger people think of it that way. Technically, it's 50
Yeah.
years. So if that's any reassuring to you,
I
they
mean,
weren't.
we're not that far off when we talk about the 80s, so.
Yeah, they're not. They're not.
Well, that's
It's
the
1976, so
yes, I know.
that's
We're
the
getting closer.
cutoff.
I was still already born, so it doesn't matter if
Well, I think the
I was
big joke
alive in a
is.
historical era.
Yeah, the big joke now is, especially in education, if you work with kids, right? You were born, your birth year starts with the 19. What? That's the big,
Like,
I've
well,
seen memes
I
about
regularly
that.
get papers where it's the 1900s or that kind
Oh.
of reference. It's like, how dare you,
I know.
Ouch. Like,
I just want to know how far into the 2000s here do we have to be before I can start referring to the first decade with aughts? Like back in aught
they were
five.
trying to get people to say that, and I don't think anybody's gonna say it.
Maybe we
It's
have to
like
get to
GIF
like
and
the
JIF.
maybe we're a couple decades away from that. I don't
People are
know.
say
GIF,
people
GIF.
say
Actually,
2000s,
it's
and
GIF.
that's what they think. It's like, it's when, and it's funny, whenever I took linguistics, it's this thing like it has to be sexy. It has to be sexy to catch on, and saying the oddies is not, it's not sexy to these ones.
I mean,
I don't think they're gonna say
I hope I never hear myself say it, so I'm just
it.
making the joke.
I think one thing that I could also add to the pivot conversation is one thing I really enjoy about Broadleaf in particular is that we all openly discuss our day jobs and how we balance our creative goals with our professional commitments and things like that. And I think one lesson that I learned was to embrace those personal professional pivots because pre-pandemic, I actually moved from education, more classroom-based, which seems like a recurring theme with writers and broadleafers in particular. But I transitioned from that into instructional design and developing e-learnings and that kind of thing. And that was during that gap between the first kind of sampler that I put out online to, putting out a physical copy of my fully expanded book. And in that pivot time, I was able to work with and meet graphic designers, people who are good with formatting. I picked up some project management skills. And I think that was interesting to me to realize that I could take all of those skills and those connections and actually pivot into achieving some of my creative goals, and that those skills and those relationships were transferable. So that's one thing that's taught me, anytime there is even a pivot on the personal side of things, maybe I can use this in to meet my writing and creative goals.
Yeah. Piper, you had mentioned, and this kind of fits into the personal professional pivot. You had mentioned about on periods and off periods, and I totally relate to that because my writing life has been a constant role of on periods and off periods. And right now I'm in a prolonged off period because of a personal professional job that I took that altered my schedule to the point that it is difficult. And I struggle with that, and I always have when I'm not writing, I struggle with it. I feel like I am just less myself. And I feel the pressure to go, and it just kind of builds up, and then the anxiety comes in. So, without getting into like a therapist moment here on myself, pivot back to you. How do you both manage those times when you can't get there?
I think an understanding that there is just understanding that there is a time when you are doing other things that contribute to a time when your writing life might be more fertile down the road. There is a, I think a point or a process of doing more of a taking in of a lot of different things that all I think contribute to developing your writing skill, et cetera, and not trying to feel some kind of way about that. In terms of that's the way that I think about it, at least. I mean, that's just sort of that's just how it occurs to me.
Yeah, and I would agree with that and just say that when I'm not feeling that creative spark, I try to read. I try to watch something that maybe will inspire me or get me excited about what I'm working on. I think last year, a really big example of that was I was doing a lot of conventions and festivals and the working on focusing on the marketing side of writing my projects. And so I was a little bit burnt out. I was just tired, you know. I was excited. I wanted to write. I had all these ideas, but where do you find the time between being on the go and resting? And I went to see Sinners. And that, I mean, now it's blown up all of the Oscar nominations and everything. It's so exciting. But that was one project for me. I'm sure we all have those where we read something or watch something and we're like, I wish I had written that. Or, you know, it's almost like a jealous feeling, like that was so good.
I'm gonna say that mine is and always will be Back to the Future.
See? Yeah, exactly.
And
Classic.
I totally feel that when I find that, if I'm just, you know, when I'm scrolling channels or if I'm on a streaming site and I see it, I'm like, yes, I've got it. Just give me a half hour, whatever I've got to immerse myself. Because that's about the only way that I could deal with it is to find story wherever I can find it, because I have to feed that. So it's either, like you said, watching a show or movies or reading, you know, whether you're somebody who creates story through AI generation or video game writing or just playing video games or wherever it happens to be, making reels, what I mean, there's so much story all over the place. And sometimes it's nice just to be a part of it.
And I also have to remind myself that a lot of my goals and a lot of the pressure is self-imposed, because there are times where we need to get a manuscript, we need to get edits back to someone. There are hard dates that we have to hit, but I think we also put a lot of pressure on ourselves. And it's nice to have this conversation just to realize, oh, I'm not the only one who feels anxious because I should be doing this or I should be doing that. But so much of it is the pressure that we put on ourselves to create.
Yeah. This is like right in line with I love asking, I've told you guys this before. I love asking the question about managing mental health, because this thing that we do, it's such a solo journey, and it's all lived between the ears until you can like type it out, and you're constantly battling characters and story and expectations and doubts and fears and all this stuff constantly, and it can lead to such personal down periods if you don't manage it properly. So I don't feel like I need to ask the question, because you all were already kind of talking about managing those expectations and managing that workload. But if you do ever feel really overwhelmed or you're feeling it build up, is there something that you go to? Is it movies and reading for you, DC? Is it, you know, going outside? What do you do when you just feel like you can't create because you feel like you're about to just fall apart?
I would say sunshine is a big one. So I do try to get out of my head and into nature. One that is less scholarly is reality television. Something that I can watch
Like
and just totally
Survivor reality television or
bingo.
Housewives reality
Yep,
television?
more
Okay,
Bravo,
Love
more of the vein of
Island.
Bravo.
Okay, got it.
That is one thing, as silly as it sounds, it's one of the things where I can just disengage, laugh, be immersed and not think about what I should be doing in the moment. There might be some people say guilty pleasure. I say embrace it.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, mine is more true crime. I like get deeply
Guys are
into true
speaking my
crime.
language here.
Yeah, deeply.
Again, my type of weirdo. No, I mean, I love digging. It's like Jess and I have Netflix, and of course she has her page on it, and I have my page on it. And when we want to find documentaries and true crime stuff, we go to mine because that's all over the place. And when we want to find Love Island and all the Christmas romance stories, we go to hers. So it's worked out perfectly. The algorithm is helping us. But yeah, you're speaking my language there. So that's a good go-to.
And I think also another part of it too is, and this is another sort of thing across the writing journey, it's hard to take in and it's hard to remember, but it's just really crucial. At least that I've noticed in terms of the patterns that fall out. Not everybody gets everything. So it's like you really do have to make the best effort to keep your eyes on your own paper. And not look at yourself, comparing yourself to other people. And you know, some people, now because I've been in it long enough now where,
I don't know what happened there. Just keep
Wow.
going.
People who I started out with, like, they're on bestseller lists and all this other kind of stuff. And you're looking and you're like wondering, well, she wasn't that great to begin with. Or, it's like you really have to like try to tamp those things down in terms of, because it really is, it really seems like everybody does not get the same thing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, I can get that. Well, we're at the end time scooting on by as it does. But before we go, so Piper, you've been a speaker at the Broadleaf Writers Conference a couple times, and DZ, you were at last year's as an attendee. So this year, you're on the other side. And you're behind the curtain where the planning takes place and the conversations are being had and everybody's working together. What are you looking forward to the most about the conference, which is September 19th and 20th at the Decatur Library in Decatur, Georgia, and registration will open April 1st. Okay, I got my plug in. What are you both looking forward to the most being part of the organization this time?
I would say just being able, exactly what Piper just said, that feeling of imposter syndrome that sometimes writers have, or, why is it not happening for me, or that kind of doubt and everything that creeps in. I think my biggest takeaway or excitement about the conference is being all in one room and being able to be positive and dispel some of that negative energy that we have. I think just being in the same room as people who are on bestseller lists and this and that, and the energy of kind of ho the hopefulness that's there and the excitement. I think with Broadleaf, I've never felt or been made to feel less than. There are some writer circles where that's the case. I'm the bestseller and I'm up here. Why are you talking to me? Don't meet your heroes, is what they say, right? But I think I'm just looking forward to that in positive energy. That's palpable when you're all in the auditorium together.
Yeah, I agree. Certain conferences can help with that. I think Broadleaf is one of them that does create that kind of circumstance. And the feeling, of course, that you are doing something for yourself as a writer that helps to dispel, hopefully, some of that feeling of comparison and all of that. But I guess for me, always it is, getting to go to different panels and having learning opportunities, etc. I always do look forward to that as well.
Nice. Look, I mean it when I say I am very happy to have you both on the board. I'm very excited to have you as part of the organization and look forward to what you will be bringing to Broadleaf for years to come. So obviously we can find brief bios about you on broadleafwriters.com, but real quick, where can we find you on the socials or website?
Well, my stuff is piperhughley.com. Insta is Piper underscore Hughley. Threads, Piper Hughley. And then, yeah. If anybody still uses Facebook, it's the same
Yep, and I'm at Frightful Fables everywhere. I'm on all the things. I dread the moment that they announce a new social media platform because
thing.
we have to be everywhere all the
So.
time. But
Yeah.
yeah, I'm probably most active on Instagram, I would say, but I'm on all of the platforms pretty much you can think of.
Okay, cool. Well, give these folks a follow, find them on their websites, read their books, and come to the conference and say hello to them. DC Piper, thank you so much. I know I get to see you again, so it's not even a bye. It's just I'll see you next time. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Thanks.